political issues enter into the discussion, sometimes publicly, sometimes privately. Are there other factors other than this pure numbers game that you think are entering into the problem?
I know what you're asking. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of other factors that are entering into this. I do have firsthand suspicions, let's call it. When we went down to the negotiations, there was a general feeling, well, first of all, there's been a concern on the Fraser River and the negotiations of the Fraser River that comes into this. There's sockeye salmon on the Fraser River that are caught by Americans in Washington State, somewhere to the tune of 3 million fish a year, sometimes 6 million. The Canadians have wanted to get that fishery under control. There's a problem on the Columbia Rivers with treaty Indians and fish reaching them. The number of fish reaching them is very small. The dollars involved in that operation are very small compared to the Fraser River operation. However, my personal feeling, the way they carried out the negotiations down there, let me first preface all this. The first thing to come up was going to be the northern sections and the Chinook sections dealing with Alaska. The small potatoes were going to be taken care of in the first week, and then the second week we were going to come back to talk about the real big game, the Fraser River. Now, we had a real concern over that because I saw that we were being put into a position where if we nixed the treaty, then someone would be able to come back and say, hey, look, Alaska knocked this treaty out. We're the ones that are to blame, and the lower interests really wanted to get something done, but were never able to even reach the discussion of the Fraser River. Well, what happened down there is we came out with some numbers there and some things that looked pretty good, so we didn't say no to the treaty. We sat down and continued to talk, so they had to talk about the Fraser River. When they started talking about the Fraser River, they've got an agreement down there that 2,500 gill netters and seiners, and we're not talking about people on the levels that we have here, but we're talking significant fishermen, a major fishery, is violently opposed to this treaty. By and large, the Washington State fishermen on the whole, the seafood processors, everyone else is opposed to this treaty in Washington State. However, the state government is taking sort of a lukewarm position in favor of the treaty to benefit what might be tribal interests in the Columbia River. I don't know for what reason. However, when we got the document out of negotiating sessions and it came back to me on December 22nd, it was a very much changed document. And it's a document that anyone down there full well knew would be completely objectionable to the Alaskan interests. I think we've been set up, as Washington's set up, to object to this treaty, to put the no factor, to say no treaty, on behalf of Washington State, while Washington State sits in a position and says we're very supportive of this thing. However, it's the Alaskans that are saying no to it, because they have significantly more to lose here on the Fraser River than we have anywhere else, and they have very little to gain on the Columbia River. However, they've taken a position that's sort of contrary to their interests, and the only reason I could see that would be for political purposes within the state of Washington. So I see that it seems something's wrong here. Something just isn't right the way the actors are, the way things are aligned here, and the way this treaty came back to us, because we attended the meetings and we bargained in good faith. Granted, the document that came out that I came back with before I had this document would also not have been acceptable to the trollers up here. It may have been acceptable to a few more of them than there are. There may have been some in favor of it, but it generally was not acceptable. This document is definitely not acceptable, and it's not acceptable to trollers, gill netters, seiners, to anyone up here. So something happened in between, and I can't tell you exactly what, but I think it's an internal political thing taking place in Washington State.
Representative,
I would like to ask to be excused from this meeting. I have an airplane to catch. And my aide, Rena Bukovich, is here and will keep notes on the rest of the meeting, if that may be excused. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed started to touch upon my question as what are the other political implications are there. Our Canadian neighbor has never really had to count fish. Up to recently, they've been concerned about counting fish. They still only have their 1982 count in. And I don't think you'll find an Alaskan that will disagree with what we've been doing here in trying to conserve our fish, and at the same time the fish that we're conserving always end up in the quota that the Canadians are going to base their catch upon. My concern here is, besides all the loopholes and things that are in that treaty, was based upon what you're touching on, the state of Washington and the treaty with the Indian tribes there that we have developed. If this treaty is not successful, then I assume that we'll be facing a settlement or a suit
in relation to the fisheries there out of Washington. And our main goal, of course, is to build up the stock. As you mentioned, it's a coastal problem. If we don't have any treaty at all, we probably would be in a worse position, would we not, being tied in with the treaty obligations to the native community of the state of Washington, and the fact that the Canadians would continue on doing what they're doing. In your mind, what would be the ramifications if this treaty was not passed?
Well, we went down to the hearing down there, and one of the things that was discussed was whether or not the Indian treaties were going to be brought into this treaty. The Indian treaties on the Columbia River, there are treaties that have been, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the Bolt decision has reviewed specifics on treaties dealing with a 50-50 split of fish in the Columbia River. Some of those fish do blend into our fishery up here and are caught up here, so that their contention is that those fish ought to be considered as part of the 50-50 split of fish to the non-white fishery, to the white fishery and to the Indian fishery, that it should be included in that scenario.
Last year the Confederated Band of Yakima Tribes filed suit against the state of Alaska and the Secretary of Commerce. Just to speed it on at this point, at the treaty they indicated that that would be a part of, for they would forego their suit if this treaty were implemented and everything would be fine. A week after that, I contacted their attorney. Their attorney intends, regardless of whether or not this treaty is signed, to pursue the case against the state of Alaska and to find a determination of whether or not those Indian treaties on the Columbia River actually apply up here. He's going to do that regardless. The treaty itself has a specific provision that says, apart from what comes out of this document, that in no way will this document alter existing treaties between domestic user groups. So what's happened is, the Indian tribes on the Columbia River are basically looking at this, and they're desirous of having it both ways, is what it's going to come down to.
Well, then you mean we could have a treaty with Canada talking about a number of fish, and then there may be a further restriction upon Alaskan fishermen that would have to be settled between sister states in relation with what allocation we get.
Correct. That's correct.
We could be looking at a considerably smaller number of fish.
Even with the treaty, we may be looking at a considerably smaller number of fish. That, I mean, legally, I have had legal training, and my view is that those treaties aren't particularly applicable up here, and that even if they were applicable, to find a federal court judge who would say that when you have fish where we catch, if we reduce 35 fish, they will see one fish in the river, apart from whether the treaties even apply, once you get over that threshold question, there's the question of the equities of whether or not this is a good way to wipe out the southeastern economy to satisfy another 5,000 fish on the Columbia River, or to have some other form of transfer payments. Congress could deal with that at that level.
Are there any more questions?
If there's time, we have a short. Okay. Just one brief thing. In the process of developing this stronger state position, whether it be on this particular issue or for the future, do you have any recommendations on how we can get some equity with Washington State in terms of the sort of consideration we get from the federal government?
I think the best way we can do that is to have a strong state presence in Washington, D.C., and to fund a fisheries position back there in the governor's office or whatever sort would be best there, to unify our congressional delegation on these things. A lot of times I'll find that they are not working in the same direction, or they're not fully aware. I'll figure that if I call up Murkowski's aide, that Stevens' aide will have everything that Murkowski's aide has, and that there'll be a free flow of information. That really doesn't seem to exist. So having that coordination back there, coupled with having members of the Senate and the House with seniority, does prove very helpful to us, and it's going to have to be used wisely, I guess.
Could you give me an update on that position? Is that an existing position and that's back in D.C., or...?
No, there isn't. There's been discussion about funding a position back there. Deming Coles, I believe, heads up the office in Washington, D.C. However, there's been discussion of having someone subordinate to him working directly on fisheries or natural resources issues and coordinating and disseminating information and lobbying the Alaska position, and along with that, coordinating a directed effort with the congressional delegation back there.
Wasn't there a position with... What did Mike Rubenstein,
Mike Rubenstein's position is as an attorney in the Department of Commerce. So he's in a position where he would have hands-on to documents that would flow through the Department of Commerce regarding fisheries in Alaska. But in reality, he's tied down as an attorney working for the federal government.
Okay, I'd like to talk to you more on that later.
Okay. There are a couple other... Okay, if we... I want to move on from the treaty, too, and I hope I'm not taking too much of your time.
Well, from your remarks that you have made so far, then, and I'm trying to summarize it up, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are trying to say here that if we do look at this treaty, we have to make some amendments, very obviously. One would correct the problem that might exist in some of these areas here that you classify as loopholes, in which fish could be recorded as caught, caught in an area that is different than what they report. And the other one is an amendment to this treaty that would have a floor for Alaskan Chinook salmon of 300,000 plus.
Yes, I'm not picking any numbers.
Is that your two major amendments that you would be looking at?
If we do get into having a treaty, those are the two major amendments. There are a lot of other problems we can discuss, but I think those are the two. That would ensure that we wouldn't go out of business on this deal, first of all. And secondly, it would ensure that in fact the benefits that we're seeking would in fact occur, that the Canadians wouldn't catch the fish elsewhere. The way it's set up now, Alaska can end up not fishing Chinook salmon, at least not trolling for Chinooks at all, and the Canadians can end up catching all the fish in that open area. I guess other than the treaty, which we got directed on, which I'm glad I got that finished with before your committee here, because that could go on ahead to great lengths. There's some other concerns that we have with the legislature and with the state. I think I touched on that, and that being budgetary items within the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The Alaska Trollers Association is very interested in seeing increased funding for research and tagging efforts, and particularly on coho and Chinook salmon. In Southeastern, we know about nothing on coho salmon. The department in forecasting, for instance, they can tell us that we're going to have either a good or a poor year. If you start to ask them about numbers, they don't have any idea. We have no idea of the size of the resource, the number of streams that sustain runs, what magnitude of fish enter the streams and spawn, how many fish you need to get so many out to maintain your runs. We know nothing about coho salmon, and something has to be done here. As people can see, with Chinook being questioned all the time, coho is going to become probably the sustaining force for power trollers and hand trollers to a great extent rely on coho salmon, and we lack basic data on coho.
Yeah. What kind of protection effort is
there on coho? For coho, what's done now is there's a yearly 10-day closure that takes place. That's sort of it's questionable whether you need it every year. They don't really, I mean, it's done in order to protect the resource, because the people at the department are concerned that they don't know what might happen if they didn't have a 10-day closure. There's fear that somebody might catch all the fish, because they really don't know what to do. So their 10-day closure is sort of a baseball bat approach to solving the problem. If they could have a 20-day closure, they'd feel a lot more confident that the resource would sustain itself. If they had a 5-day closure, they wouldn't be as sure. So they're operating at a point where they're not certain what the maximum sustainable yield is. They don't really have any idea what the yield should be. Also in Southeastern, the other concern we have is with Chinook salmon, and the fact that we know very little more about Chinook than we do about coho. And in fact, the data that we have on Chinook salmon comes primarily from the efforts of the Sport Fish Division. What happens with this is when we get into management meetings, when the trollers are involved with the federal government before the North Pacific Council, the data that we're constantly confronted with is from the Washington Department of Fisheries. It's biased data in favor of the Washington Department. However, it's the best available data, and as such, it becomes the standard. Our own department has little information and provides none of the data used in determining stock runs and migration patterns or anything like that. It's primarily coming out of the Washington Department of Fisheries. So these two areas of coho and Chinook salmon research are of high concern to us. Additionally, in the department, and I brought Earl Krieger here to address you, and I think maybe he can talk at some other time. Earl Krieger is our troll biologist. We have a contracted program with the state, with the Department of Fish and Game, to gather troll statistics on the fishery. Earl will leave some of the books here with you so you can look at what actually happens. We document on a daily basis what the catch is, where the fish are caught, whether they have tags, what the water temperature is, whether there are marine mammals in the area, weather conditions, a number of items that give specific key data on the Chinook fishery and on the coho fishery. You can track the schools of fish by tracking the logbook data as to where fishermen are moving to catch them and as to whether they're sustaining their catch as they move up and down the coast. This data, we gather it. We haven't really been able to use it that much because we're just the data gathering source of this. Next year we're going to be requesting funding to try and put the ability in our office to be able to use this data so that we can go through some of the models. The department has not done very much with relying on the fishermen for information. We found that we're able to get participants in this program. The cost to the department would be maybe 50 times more or 100 times more if they were trying to go out and do this on their own. Yet we're able to get this information. The fishermen are concerned, and fishermen would like to work to provide information for the department. So I think somehow the department has to be made to recognize that programs involving the fishermen are very important and would be a lower-priced avenue of gathering the data that they lack.
Well, I'm somewhat familiar with your logbook program that you have been working with as independent information gatherers. And what are we now, in about our third, fourth year of that program?
Since 1976, so we're in our sixth, we're going into our seventh year.
Okay, well, my comments would be then that this information, at least in relation with king salmon, would not be too effective until we get into about the seventh or 15th year or so. And this is one thing we've always had to fight in the budget battle, is trying to fund those darn logbook programs, which is our information base. And I think we'll try to do everything within our power to make sure that that logbook program, you know, will continue, because that's the only information that we seem to be getting on Kings. And I know where you're coming from there, but you said since
1976.
We'll have an outline present, and we'll present it to each one of you individually on the logbook and on the way it's been put together and the costs and the participation and involvement over the last 6 years. We haven't been able to generate that yet. I think an additional item of concern to us in the Fish and Game budget relates to the FRED division, to the Fisheries Rehabilitation and Enhancement Division. And I'm going to speak quite highly of them. When it comes to Chinook salmon in Southeastern, the FRED division is the only entity that's able to help the fishermen here with building the stocks and enhancing the streams. It's true that we have private nonprofits and primarily the regional aquaculture corporations that are funded by the fishermen, and they've been very active and pursuing programs related to species of salmon other than Chinook. However, FRED division is the entity that possesses the skill and the expertise to work with Chinook. I'm not saying that at some time in the future the private regional aquaculture associations will not be able to assume that burden, because I think they will. However, at this time, FRED division is necessary to maintain the programs that they have been working on related to our Chinook resources in Southeastern. A lot of talk has come up where people just add up the numbers to see that the nonprofits turn out so many million fish and FRED division doesn't turn out this many million fish. The problem there is that when you start comparing pink salmon to Chinook salmon, you're comparing apples and oranges. They're entirely different things. So I ask this committee to review very closely requests for funding that come from FRED division, and take a second look at everything that's drawn into question, because we found that the work that they do down there is very good and very needed. So that would be our concern about the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Our third area of concern, which I addressed, was the maintenance of our habitat, and the habitat that our salmon stocks depend on. With the present worldwide recession, we haven't seen massive development of logging or mining down here in southeastern. What that's done is that's given us the time to plan for the orderly development, I think. And it's going to have to start somewhere. A lot of people are at loose ends just talking about this, but we have the time now, we have the ability now. Our association is very concerned that we address this problem together. The trees grow back every 100 years, the minerals are gone forever, but the fish come back every year and sustain the economy. And that has to be addressed every time that we see a development which affects the fisheries and biases in favor of the mineral interests or the logging interests. I'm not saying that we can't have logging and we can't have mineral development together with the fisheries, because we can do that. But what we're going to have to do is look very critically at how it's being done. We're going to have the necessary permitting structure, if it takes that, to review what's being done. The local economies on a year-to-year basis are sustained by the fisheries over the long term. Mining is short-term. Logging is even somewhat short-term. I think this, I believe that this committee will address that problem, however, in their review of what's necessary here in the state. And I thank you for giving me the time to testify here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I just like to let you know that we have moved up the schedules for the teleconferencing for the treaty, and it's February 8th at 2:45 to 4:45 in our Pacific Standard Time. February 14th, 5 o'clock to 6:45 Pacific Standard Time on the 14th.
I think that'll do really well for us.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have Jim Cantor from the Lower Yukon Kuskokwim Aquaculture Association.
I'll make this real fast. I'm just down here for a couple of days from Bethel and wanted to let you know what the Aquaculture Association is and is doing and is looking for up in that direction. The fishery up there is a relatively small fishery dollar-wise compared to the other parts of the state, but it's the only dollars the people up there get. And it's a fishery that's coming under pressure with reduced catches of fall chums, drastically reduced this year, and the Canadian pressure for more king salmon coming up. And if aquaculture is ever going to play a role in doing that, we're down at ground zero. Right now, they don't even know how many fish are coming up the river, let alone where they're going or what they're doing or how to enhance them. Fish and Game's been working on basic enumeration questions, but they're still a long ways from getting anywhere. What we're talking about doing is basic research with more of an aquaculture bent, where the fish are growing, what they're feeding with, what they're competing with, juvenile studies, habitat studies, and whatnot. It's basic ground-level research that is needed if we're going to lead to aquaculture that won't interfere with the mixed stock fishery that's going on, meaning the fish are all coming up the Yukon River and all rearing and breeding in that area, as opposed to having ocean rearing grounds and whatnot. I just wanted to talk to this committee to let them know what it is. Our research proposals are about 3 or 4 pages into this thing. I handed out stream analyses of the fish communities, as I said, juvenile studies, and stock separation. We're down at a ground level of just researching to get to that area. Fish and Game hasn't been able to address that yet. So it's something that we're coming to the legislature for funding for.
Yeah, I suggested to you to probably get your legislators to draft a bill so
right.
The committee could have something to work with.
Yeah, we're working on that, and I just wanted to let the committee know that this will be coming forward later in the session, and what it is and what we are going on with it.
Jim,
could I get your full name and address?
Jim Cantor, C-A-N-T-O-R. And it's box 634, and it's on the top of the page here.
Oh, I see. Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you very much.
Do we have anything?
Any more questions?
Yes. It's a fishery that's relatively healthy now, but the pressures are increasing, and people out there want to start looking at it now before any crashes happen.
What is the situation with stream protection in the area? Do you find that that there is a problem with the natural stocks or when coming, when you speak of pressure?
Yeah.
Is this fishing pressure or industrial development, or what kind of pressure?
There's a lot of different pressures. There's the pressures from oil drilling and exploration in Norton Sound, which are going to affect all of the Yukon stream stocks, and also the Canadians wanting their quota of kings coming up. There's also fishing pressure on the fall chums. A lot of it's interception pressure. And then there's a fishery at the mouth of the Yukon that this year harvested the top of their quota, and combined with the interceptions, that meant that upriver fishermen didn't even get their subsistence catch this year.
Do you have any recommendations for management guidelines on natural stocks in your area? Or maybe I should go back a step. Do you participate in developing such guidelines through your association, or are you strictly concerned with aquaculture?
Well, we're strictly looking at aquaculture. We participate through the fish and game boards and whatnot. As far as recommendations specifically, I don't have any for you now.
Thanks.
Okay, that's all. I just wanted to
let you know.
Thank you.
I'd like to let the committee know that there will be no meetings next week. Representative Fuller and I will be in Vancouver. So, meeting adjourned.
Yeah, well, you'll get it.
Okay. Okay.